Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World, Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor, my colleague and co-host and co-pilot, David Livingston of the space show, Dr. Space. And we're going looking for life in the universe via the asteroid Bennu. The headline from the Smithsonian Magazine: scientists discover traces of salt water and building blocks of life in NASA's samples from the asteroid Bennu. Subhead: two new papers describe hints to a brine-filled environment on the 4.5-billion-year-old space rock Bennu and the presence of amino acids, offering clues to how early Earth got its ingredients for life. We welcome a clue hunter, my colleague Charles Pellegrino. He and Jesse Stoff published a book in the 1970s, Darwin's Universe, in which they reasoned there was likely to be hydrothermal layers in asteroids. However, at the time, that was not acceptable speculation. There were no exoplanets in the 1970s. Everything we're looking at about chasing other worlds and finding other Earths has come about in these last 20 years of exoplanets. However, that has opened up speculation again as to life moving around. Is it here on Earth, or is it cast through the universe, life of any form? Charlie, congratulations for being right in the wrong time zone, 1970s. But here we are in the 21st century, and two new papers celebrated by the Smithsonian Magazine are looking at the same story. What are we looking at, Charlie? What has Bennu got that confirmed your speculation 50 years ago? Good evening to you.
It has the amino acids. It has a lot of the organic material. All those years ago, there were two meteorite fragments, which are fragments from asteroids of this type, very rare meteorites called carbonaceous meteorites, which we now have sampled. And this is the proof that all these organic materials, all these traces of subsurface warm, wet zones, salty, wet zones inside asteroid parent bodies, the only way you could really prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt was to get a sample from one of these carbonaceous asteroids. And that's what we now have. This asteroid that we're talking about once was part of a larger body, maybe 400, 500 miles across. And during the first billion years of the solar system's history, these bodies were smashing themselves open, colliding. And the meteorites are like a poor man's space program. We get these samples that randomly drop down to Earth. So we had the Nicolaian meteorites, which get a lot of information from them when you cut them open. That's near the center of an asteroid where it was very hot in the early solar system when these bodies formed down in their centers. Yeah, they differentiated, the heavy metals fell to the center. And like Earth's Nicolaian core, you had these Nicolaian cores, and those are the meteorites most people see in museums where you see these crystal forms that are polished. They, on average, took about, grew at the rate of about cooling a half degree centigrade per million years. So they were warm and wet for about the first half billion years of the solar system's history. Now, my co-author, Jesse Stoff, 17 years old, he was working out the mathematics of this, that, well, what about something larger than these asteroids? And if there was gravitational flexing, a moon like Europa, originally we thought Io around Jupiter, could be warm and wet and still have under ice a warm, wet zone where life could still be developing. The math was a little off. The effect was a little bigger. So Io is a completely volcanic moon. You had to look to the moons next door, which Europa is very much in the news. And we both agreed, well, you know, you have a half billion years or so. the first steps in the direction of life could begin to develop. And what you have in these asteroids is on the path to life, they ended up freezing through to the core. And Jesse and I were writing to Bob Ballard at the time. He went up, visited Carl Sagan. We're just a couple teenagers at the 4-H camp in those days. And in those days also, you had people like Sagan and Ballard who were very open to, okay, let's help the next generation of explorers. And we both agreed, but then it had to be, can life actually develop there? How can you have life under Europa when you don't have sun that can get through the ice? Where's the food chain? And one day, Jesse had these letters from Bob Ballard, 1977. His team discovers the hydrothermal vents deep in the bottom of the ocean, the tube worms, life on hydrogen sulfide instead of sunlight. And we're jumping up and down. Jesse says, here's your damn food chain source. And we're writing to Ballard saying, you have just opened up a new window on the entire universe, which, in fact, he had. Damn. And now we have space probes going out there and finding and bringing back these things.
David Livingston, you have a question for Charlie.
Yeah. Hi, Charlie. How do these elements like the amino acids and things, how do they stay alive and active for millions of years in space before they come down on Earth? How are they still worth something and not just useless, dead, whatever?
Well, they never, probably none of them ever got to the stage of life. What we're looking at is pre-living chemical evolution. In the Murchison and Daugay, you find porphyrin molecules, which are precursors to chlorophyll and hemoglobin. They're not, and the randomly assembled proteins, they're not life, but it's moving in that direction. The question was, all the way back then, are there places that are still warm and wet that didn't, like these 400, 500 mile wide bodies, freeze to the core? Are there places where this could still be going on to this day, just like Earth being warm and wet? And then we began looking toward and waiting for the Pioneer and Voyager probes to get out there, looking toward moons of Jupiter and Saturn. And that's what eventually turned up. You see venting onto the surface, Jupiter's moon Europa. Ganymede's a good candidate. You see evidence of a lot of geologic activity still going on. Saturn's moon Titan, Saturn's moon Enceladus. And even further out in the solar system, things might have actually progressed beyond just pre-living chemical evolution to life. And it may be a very common thing throughout the whole galaxy that the phenomenon we call life is probably pulled from a very simple bag of tricks.
Preliminary spectroscopy surveys of the asteroid surface by OSIRIS-REx, this is the Bennu probe, confirmed magnetite and the meteorite asteroid linkage dominated by phyllosilicates. Phyllosilicates, among others, hold water. So what we're looking at here, the hydrothermal layer was heated by the core and had at some point liquid water. We're talking about liquid here, or the elements of liquid water. That all combined to make the conditions of something moving? Is that the theory, Charlie?
Yeah, you would have had basically underground groundwater circulating. And that's what we see. In fact, we see the very same mineral formations at these deep ocean hydrothermal vents with pyrotite crystals, for example. We see these very same mineral formations in the meteorite samples and also in the samples from the asteroid. So it's pretty exciting stuff.
I want to make certain what is in the asteroids, Bennu, for example, is in the larger asteroid belt objects and in the planets, all one, pieces of each. Is that the way to think of this?
Yeah. And some people say that the indications are the asteroid asteroids like this could have contributed to life on Earth or actually been the origin of life on Earth. And I've seen some arguments either or. It's probably not either or. Some of the material contributed to Earth, but Earth was very capable 3.5-4 billion years ago of cooking up its own life. You had warm, wet regions on the planet. You had all sorts of sources of energy, waterfalls, hydrothermal vents. So there's life probably, you begin to get the impression that maybe as you look out across the galaxy, as you look out across the stars, that, the sky is smeared with life, or at least attempts at evolving life.
David Livingston, you have a question.
If Earth was capable to probably produce its own life, would what's coming in from the asteroids be comparable to that life, or is there any indication that it might be a little bit different somehow than what Earth could produce on its own?
That's a question. We don't know. Some of these questions are so new, we don't know quite how to answer them. I would guess that it just got mixed in. If there was life already on Earth or already on Mars, because we're going back to the ancient solar system, so Mars was warmer and wetter at that time, it could have, the amino acids could have been incorporated in. The porphyrin molecules could have been incorporated in. If any of these asteroids were large enough and warm enough and wet enough for long enough to develop life, maybe protocells could have survived on Earth or Mars. Maybe not. Maybe they just got eaten. You have Chris McKay thinks that life had an earlier start on Mars. And when you have asteroids hitting Mars, some of that could have gotten fallen into Earth's oceans and could have gotten incorporated into life on Earth. So there may be Martians on Earth, but they may be only partly us.
So Bennu, OSIRIS-REx, to probe to Bennu, to bring the sample back, is confirming a theory, a speculation, a theory after 50 years. We're going to turn to something that is fun, and Charlie is very good at the game. We're going to give him an unlimited budget. He mentioned Europa, so he's got an unlimited budget. And what's in Europa that the Europa Clipper is going to find, and what else do we need to know? Charles Pellegrino, the author, co-author of Darwin's Universe, Once Upon a Time with Jesse Stoff. He's written many other books, but this is the fun one, because in Darwin's Universe, Charlie is a teenager with a science fiction idea. Here we are in the 21st century. And he's one of the big guys on the theory of panspermia. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. Once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long-term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.